The human body has been gifted with a vertical spine. In the human body, we have the potential to move from the individual consciousness to the cosmic consciousness. The animal is given a horizontal spine. So the masters are quite right when they say it is a rare gift to be born as a human being. And the journey of life for those on the spiritual path is to move from the base consciousness, the animal instincts, animal tendencies, to the top of the spine. So the spiritual journey, whichever it may be, you may be following a particular Kriya Yoga practice or Advaita, whatever it is, must deliver this potential. Otherwise, you are stuck with it as a practice. So all our base emotions, jealousy, envy, ill will towards others, hatred for those who have hurt me, vengeance, malice, greed, pride, arrogance, if all these are still present while I'm doing my practice, it means the spiritual practice is not delivering the results. But if I find by and by, compared to my earlier self, I am more at peace than I used to be, I accept people more and more for the way God made them, then it means I'm getting free of this burden which I have been carrying. And meditation is the start of the death of this me, the self-obsessed me, and what the me thinks the world owes it. As a friend of mine told me just 2 days ago, he said that he went and apologized to his therapist. He said, because I realized I was so self-entitled. I had done well in life, made a lot of money, provided for my family. And all the time, I was asking my family to appreciate me for what I have done. And so he said, I went and apologized to the therapist that I've been dumping all this on you. And now I've realized how self-obsessed I was. And you just kept listening to me. That's all you did, which is what a good therapist would do. But the realization happened. I just told him, don't feel too bad because you paid the therapist. You see? But when we realize that life isn't about me, this whole spotlight on me, my feelings, my emotions, my entitlements, what guarantees did God give you? And then you project it onto others that they should be a certain way, the way you feel they should be, what things they should say to you, what things they shouldn't say to you. Dominance and control. When we free people of this obligation to us, we free ourselves. We cannot free ourselves without freeing the other first. It is a matrix. You cannot get out of it on your own. You are hardwired into your relationship with others to resolve them, to see which relationship teaches you what about life. It is a two-way street. My relationship with others, my relationship with God, and my relationship with myself. That is the riddle. And in meditation, it is preferred if we sit with our palms facing up, because then we are receiving. This way we are not receiving. This way we are receiving. The palms are very powerful. That is why we have masters and gods who are blessing in this. They are not lifting their foot up and blessing this. There's a reason for everything. In this kind of meditation, a noise, let's say an outside noise of drilling or something, becomes irrelevant. Why? You're allowing it to be. The complainer is in the head. Of course, you prefer it not being there. But because you've not built a story around it, you are not suffering the meditation. And in your daily lives, there's a lot of noise, incessant noise inside the head. Actually, everything is inside only. You are seeing me, but I am inside your consciousness, appearing outside. The boss you don't like is inside your consciousness. The family member who has hurt you is inside your consciousness. The neighbor you don't get along with is inside your consciousness. Nothing is outside. That is the Maya. All negative emotions we feel are about others, but they are affecting us. Other doesn't know what is going on within us. Others are just playing out their script, their blueprint, the way God designed them. Our feelings inside is what is churning. So everyone gives us this opportunity to look at what is churning within us. And that is meditation, that awareness, that all the people in my life, who is making me feel what? Rather than living my whole life in reactivity, segmenting them into those I love and those I don't love, till my last breath, letting this game of life reveal itself. The one behind it all shapes and sizes and forms and personalities, all personalities are shaped by the one source. That is now living meditation. When you see that person in front of you through these eyes, you are meditating. Isn't it amazing? The living meditation, that's what starts happening. When I don't feel the need to tell God that He could have done better, I'm meditating. Would anyone like to ask anything or share anything?
I'm inclined to both the non-dual form of meditation as well as this Japa form of meditation, and try to practice daily as much as possible. Is it that only one should be, one way should be practiced? He cannot practice both, is it? But somehow my inclination is like that, and doing that way for quite some time.
You're inclined to do japa.
Japa also, and non-dual form of meditation also. Means in single day, you know, the morning time I do japa and the evening time I do non-dual meditation.
There's no harm if you're inclined to both. There's no harm. What is japa? Why do you do japa?
I am initiated by a guru, and he gave me a mantra, and daily, minimum so many times, I repeat it and concentrate on the form of that God. And I am doing this for 1 or 2 hours in the morning. And then in the evening, I do this non-dual form of meditation. But it goes on daily like that. My inclination is that way. But I don't know whether what I am doing is right.
See, there are two aspects. If you feel happy to do both. That is the most important thing. If one of them you're doing out of guilt, or you feel, I would rather not be doing it, don't do it. Now, japa is basically like a seed, a vibration which is planted. Some mindsets are more inclined to japa. Japa itself, the word mantra itself, means freeing the mind. So what happens through my daily life, through mundane chores, and when I start chanting the japa, the focus is shifting from the mundane to the japa. So it is creating this wedge between what goes on in my life and myself. That is the purpose of japa. And then that vibration which I have received, when I keep chanting it, it becomes part of my being. To the extent that I find I no longer have to do japa, it arises on its own when it's meant to. That is called the ajapa jap. That is japa. But someone who is drawn to non-duality, advaita, that is about learning about life. It's the path of knowledge, the path of gyan. What is this about? Why is certain things happening to me and not to the other? What are my relationships like? This is the path of knowledge. So these are two different streams. So do continue, but at any point you feel that one you are doing just out of habit and you're not really seeing any perceived benefits from it, drop it. Now you'll be surprised, the lineage I belong to, my teacher's teacher's teacher, that was a japa lineage. Bhau Sahib Maharaj used to give japa. Then Siddharameshwar Maharaj changed the whole system. what he referred to, one has the ant's way and the other has the bird's way, based on his experience. So the whole parampara's shift happened towards this, and then his disciple, Nisargadatta Maharaj, in many instances would give japa to some disciples because they were inclined for that. They would tell him, Maharaj, we don't understand all this, abide in your being, and you are that, it goes over our heads. So they were inclined to japa. As long as one practice does not compromise the other. Ultimately, whether it is gyan, japa, it is all about realizing the self. What does realizing the self mean? It is the death of the thinking mind which thinks I am separate from this all. Here the japa becomes peace of mind in daily living. That constant attention on peace through situations, through challenges I have to face, through the polarities of life, pleasure and pain, knowing this is the nature of life, my japa becomes, where can I find my peace? This is also japa only, the chant of peace. And not only peace for myself, trying my level best not to take away someone else's peace of mind, which we are very good at.
Not intentionally.
Yes, that is true. Many times intentionally also. I hurt you, you hurt me. That is the name of the game. People play this tennis match all the time. Ultimately, nothing is intentional. You know why? Because we are all being played by a source which has created our conditioning and our genetics. In that sense, we are all innocent. But the one on the spiritual path is more aware.
This is related to knowledge and experience. happiness, we say many words, happiness, peace of mind, like that. Happiness is always from within, and the triggers are different. That is what one Rupert Spira in this domain, he says, there may be multiple triggers, but happiness is only one. Like, when I walk, I have some peace of mind and happiness. And when I dance, I have a peace of mind and happiness. But I'm not able to relate both. When you say it's the same, but I have some, he says there is no types of happiness. Like, so when I walk, I'm definitely experiencing peace of mind a little bit, or I'm at peace. But I'm dancing, I have some kind of energy and I feel happy. So this happiness, that happiness, I feel different. Like, but the knowledge, this teaching says everything is same, or this should be same. My question is, do you experience, like when you do two things, the same level of happiness? Like walking, you experience some kind of peace of mind, we say. And when you do whatever you like more, or I don't know, then that happiness, you feel something. Like sensation, is it same sensation you experience both times?
Be a zombie then. See, there's a mix-up here. This true happiness, which is more like a deep contentment, is not dependent on an activity. What you are referring to is the joy of dancing. That is joyful. I am not a good dancer, so I don't experience that joy. That is a feeling, right? And being a human, you must allow yourself that feeling. True happiness is a happiness which does not depend on a pleasure. So, for example, if I win the lottery, of course I'll be happy. But that happiness is not loaded with a sense of doership. I won the lottery. The sage who wins the lottery realizes it was his destiny to win the lottery. It was his destiny for that money to come his way. So because the sense of doership is absent, he is always at peace. Now, what happens when the opposite happens with the sage? He loses his money. Of course, there will be disappointment, regret maybe, He put all his money in a particular stock and it tanked overnight. But because he has the understanding, nothing happens unless it is the will of God. He will never go to the depths of despair because he is centered in true happiness. That happiness which does not depend on the polarities of life. That does not mean the sage does not feel joyful while dancing or watching others dance. When I find by and by in life, I am not swinging like a pendulum like I used to, ecstatic one day, depressed the other. I have more like a sense of equilibrium. I have seen enough setbacks in life to know that life is about setbacks. I have seen enough pleasures being taken away from me to know that even pleasures are transient. I will by and by naturally reach that equilibrium where nothing will excite me that much and nothing will make me go right down that much.
That is the question I'm asking.
That is the true happiness.
Then it's like steady state or some same level almost.
I may be ecstatic if I see a beautiful painting in someone's house. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm in true happiness, so I won't feel anything. In fact, you feel it more. You're freed, so you feel it more. That is why my teacher would say, the sage is the Mahabhogi, the super enjoyer. When we enjoy something, we are wondering, when will I have this meal next? Will I be able to come back to this restaurant? I enjoyed it so much. The sage is not thinking all that. His enjoyment is in the moment. True happiness.
Always that space, kind of.
Everything is in the moment.
So that is a question. Like another analogy is a cloud and sky analogy. We study in this kind of thing. Sky is always there and cloud disturbs. And whenever a cloud comes, I am not able to see the sky. So I am not peace of mind or happy or whatever it is. So like generally so much clouds are there with us. Like you are enlightened people, they don't have the cloud.
Who said they don't have the clouds? This is what I'd like to ask. The enlightened person knows that it's the nature of the sky that clouds pass by.
But you penetrate and see the sky also.
Really? The enlightened person penetrates the cloud and sees the sun and the sky? If the enlightened person's loved one dies, you think they will feel no pain? When Ramana Maharshi was told about his childhood friend's passing, tears arose. Does it mean he was seeing only the sun all the time, so nothing happened? So these are misconceptions of trying to be the perfect being. The sage knows when he goes to a newborn baby's birth and he goes to a funeral that these are the polarities of life. So he'll go and congratulate the parents of the newborn and he'll go and condole the people who have lost a loved one because he has seen this is the nature of life. Birth and death are the polarities. But he won't get lost in mourning when someone dies and so self-consumed that the world becomes black. And he won't rejoice too much at the birth because we don't know what the destiny is of that birth. You see? The sage will rejoice in the happiness of others. That's what gives them happiness. True happiness is the absence of the me who thinks I am the doer of my actions and so are others.
Definitely, I'm thinking.
You know that I read that. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone stopped overthinking all the time? Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone stopped overthinking all the time? I've been thinking of this all the time. We are so lost in thinking. We think about everything. We think our way through life, thinking we can control it by our thinking. Analyzing, judging, condemning, arguing, forcing people to see my point of view. That's how our lives are lived. Advaita, non-duality, is when these polar opposites of life start eroding. And then you'll be surprised that compassion may arise for someone in your life who you thought or knew was troubling you all the time. When you see this person in the light of wisdom, divine wisdom, this person cannot help being themselves. What they must have gone through in their childhood, I don't know. Yes, he or she is troubling me, no doubt. But you see that others are helpless. And for someone who till now you felt a lot of ill will, you feel a sense of love maybe. These changes start happening. And then by and by you feel you've started accepting everyone in your life more and more, more and more, more and more. And this compartmentalization starts dissolving. Because now I am looking not with the physical eyes of duality, but the eye of singularity. The third eye, the single eye. So far everything is material. The third eye is looking at the unseen. That is why it is single. The third eye of Shiva is the single eye because it is looking at singularity. The eyes of duality are looking at multiplicity. These are going to perish with the body. Can you pass the mic there? Yeah, sure.
Oftentimes I find that less thoughts come to me when I'm trying to meditate with my eyes open. I find if I'm in a room alone, or even here perhaps, I find it easier to keep thoughts away if my eyes are open. If my eyes are closed, thoughts come fast. I've never been able to understand this. It seems counterintuitive.
Yes.
But because there are distractions. No, but to me it feels I can, I won't use the word goof off, but I can just, is this normal?
Well, there are open eye meditation techniques, but you see, why are eyes closed in meditation? Most of our consciousness flows through the eyes out. So we are engaging with the eyes. When we close that, it's that engagement is over, that overload.
Which is what confuses me why, in my case.
You have to ask yourself, first of all, there's nothing wrong with an open-eyed meditation. If you yourself feel there are fewer thoughts with open-eyed meditation, so be it. There's no problem with that. But maybe ask yourself, what would happen if I closed my eyes for half an hour? So what if there are too many thoughts? So what? Or am I afraid of certain thoughts coming up? Do I find that I'm very disturbed if I close my eyes for half an hour? What disturbs me? You see, that's why I say there's no such thing as a bad meditation. Because if you have too many thoughts in meditation, I say it is a very good meditation. Because now you are aware that there are too many thoughts. Normally we are living our lives lost in thought. We are not even aware. But to say that in my meditation I had too many thoughts is a very big step. Who had too many thoughts? That awareness was there. Now with open eyes, if I've focused on something and there's concentration, then other thoughts will not intervene to that degree.
Well, I'm not even focusing on a light or a picture or a flower or whatever. I just chill out. I mean, I'm not thinking of anything. It doesn't have to be that I'm looking at an object.
Yes.
So, just the sky.
That is fine. That is beautiful. But, for the sage, there is what is called the witnessing state and the non-witnessing state. So when there's something to witness, witnessing happens. And when there's nothing to witness, the sage shifts into the non-witnessing gear. It is not that when the sage closes his eyes, there'll be too many thoughts. In other words, that state when the eyes are closed and there are still not many thoughts, one could call samadhi. So if there are too many thoughts, it would be worth seeing what are these thoughts about.
Oftentimes trivial, what happened yesterday, what's going to happen. It's not any kind of fears or insecurities or concerns. It's just the chatter.
Then let it be. It could be someone else's chatter. It happens. Sometimes you pick up other people's thoughts. Yeah. The thing is, in deep sleep, we can't keep our eyes open. And in sleep. So, one third of our lives are with our eyes closed. Now, as long as that is a peaceful sleep, we are fine. But if we find we cannot sleep at night, because there are too many thoughts, too much thinking, then we have to look at that. If sleep is not a problem, no problem.
Sleep is a problem too.
You are not able to sleep, or during sleep you are experiencing?
No, I can fall asleep in 5-10 minutes, but at precisely 2 or 3 o'clock I wake up, and then the computer starts looking. After 1 or 2 hours, everything goes away, and again you fall asleep for 3 hours. A peculiar phenomenon.
Peculiar computer. It's okay. Yes.
Yeah, hello, Gautam, and hello, everyone present here. So actually, I just had the thought which I wanted to share with you. I don't know, I feel this all the time from inside, but I just wanted to, discuss it with somebody. So if we feel that there's no me, and I feel it many times that there's no me, and something is happening always through this body. So that means that whatever I think, whatever I do, whatever I feel, whatever emotion I have, everything is what is, right? So if there's no me, then everything is what is. There is, it's like a checkmate. No matter if I go here, I go there, I go, what my thoughts come, what I do, it's always what is. I mean, it's always consciousness. It's never I. Because if I is not there, then it has to be consciousness, right? No matter, even if the thought is not a good thought, it can be anything. Like anything I'm saying, anything I'm doing, wherever I'm going, whatever I'm doing, it's always what is, right? Am I right about it?
Is this your first time?
No, I've been here long back, 2020.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're like the Earth Kumbh Mela, once in 4 years.
Actually, that's right. And Zoom also attended.
What is your name?
Poonam.
Yeah. Poonam, it's you are right and you're not right. You see, because everything I do, if it is what is, there's no me, is not entirely correct. Because I'll ask you a simple thing. If consciousness is all there is, would consciousness harm itself? If consciousness is all there is, would consciousness harm itself?
But if the life, if it's being led, the body is being led by consciousness, then...
Therefore,
because he don't have his own, there is no me, so how would he think, what am I supposed to do?
You see, there is a me, but there is no me who thinks he or she is the doer of their actions. So there is a bit of a issue here between, let's say, someone who is unaware and someone who is aware. If I knew in my heart that consciousness is all there is, where is the question of me wanting to harm someone? You see, and earlier I used to keep repeating the story of Prahlada. When God came and stood in front of Prahlada and said, I will grant you a boon. And he said, I don't want any boon, because you standing in front of me is the boon itself. And God said, I'm sorry, I want to grant you a boon, so please choose one. And he said, all right, I want that no harm should come to those who have tortured me. And God was perplexed. This young boy is saying this. He said, why are you asking for this boon? And he says, because to wish harm upon them is to wish harm upon you, because you created them. You see, what is this pointing at? That if I was established in what is, as you are saying, there would be no hate. It doesn't mean I can hate someone and be established in what is, because God has created me this way. Do you see? Yes, I may play out my script unconsciously, but I'm mired in doership. So being in what is not a license.
What is, which is identified with the, that can be identified also, no, with the body. I mean, the what is could be, that's why it could be doing all.
The me is identified with the body, not the what is.
Yeah. Yeah,
what is what is.
Yeah.
Even when you are dead, the what is what is.
Right. Yeah.
It is the me identified. Mm-hmm. So an enlightened being is not going to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, I hurt someone because it was their destiny to be hurt and I'm not the doer of my actions, so the hurt happened. Yeah. That is understanding it at the intellectual level. When that is lived from the heart, you will not wish harm upon someone. So that is the difference.
But sometimes you feel now that, oh, I shouldn't have thought this, that should have and would have, that is...
Sure. Yeah. And therefore, you may still hurt someone without intending to. Yeah. And then you go and apologize to the person. That, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you, but it still happened. So again, the enlightened being will not hesitate to come forth and offer an apology.
Yeah, so my purpose of asking this question was like, the should have and would have is always a problem. So when you know that there is nothing other than this you could do, what you did. And...
No, there is. In the sense, if I find that my reaction was inappropriate, mm-hmm. I would tell the other, look, I realize I could have responded differently, yeah. but I didn't. I am free of the guilt because mm-hmm. deep within I know that that's what came out. But it does not mean that I stop myself from talking to the other and sharing what I feel like sharing.
And Gautam, how do you relate this with witnessing? Like, how does this thing where you're living your life, how does it relate to the witnessing?
See, there are two aspects, observing and witnessing. Most of our lives go in observing. We observe people and we judge them. So most of our lives are stuck in observing. The sage is established in witnessing. Observing is done by a me making observations and passing judgment. So when this default mechanism of judging things and people starts disengaging, witnessing is happening more and more. You can't do witnessing. Witnessing is the absence of the observer who's judging what he observes. What is your name?
Una.
Una.
So during the silent meditation, after I think around 10 minutes, I opened my eyes naturally and I saw you nodding in intervals. So just that observation happened and something arose to ask you, was it some conversation happening within or something was being acknowledged within while nodding was happening while you were meditating?
None of that. It must have been just the movement of some energy. Did you see what others were also doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me after they leave.
I'm just passing the mic. Thank you.
I don't know if I'm going to ask this question lucidly, but perhaps you'll get the gist of it. Can one say that duality rests on the foundation of non-duality? So there is ultimate consciousness, which is it is there. But in this life, etc., we are governed by the dualistic principle, cause, effect, karma, etc. You've got to play out your game, be the actors and quit the stage. So I get this feeling that non-duality is the ultimate, duality is a subset, and we are in the non-duality phase. I don't know if I'm expressing myself quite correct.
You are right, but what in the non-duality?
No, we are in the
duality.
We are in the duality, but duality rests in non-absolute. Because that is all that is there. And this is a projection of sorts where we are playing a roles out. And therefore, should do, would do, etc. You know, all these things. There is rules you have to follow. Do it, quit, get out. And that will give you a happy, peaceful life.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
But do it and quit and get out and all in peace.
Of course. I mean, don't make too much of
it. Yeah, that is very true. Don't take life too seriously. As the saying goes, none of us is getting out of it alive.
Because in the end, in our current life, it's all a big zero.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you are, what you did, what you did.
So can you live this big zero when you face challenges in life and people who bug you or situations that trouble you? That is the journey.
It has to be achieved.
Yes. That big zero, while it is happening, knowing that this is zero, it's a big fat zero. Your opinion about someone is a big fat zero. Your opinion about a politician is a big fat zero. And how does that happen?
by allowing it.
Allowing it and allowing others to express their opinion.
Allowing all of it.
Yeah, allowing yourself to express your opinion, allowing others to express their opinion. So be it. Not trying to convince the other. You say what you feel like saying based on your genetics and conditioning. That look, this is my view. And you leave it. Big fat zero. But because we are hooked to our opinions and views and judgments, that zero starts the journey of numbers. And we get stuck in that karmic loop. There's a phrase called piercing the veil of duality. That is what starts happening in daily living. Piercing the veil of duality. When that happens, I'm no longer afraid of death. Why? Because I've already died in daily living to everything. Then what is left?
Bide your time.
Bide your time. It is like the saying goes, you buy an expensive dress and the next day the maid burns it while ironing, you'll come to know how established you are in being. Because we have identified with that dress, my dress, I spent so much money for it, she burnt it, doesn't know anything about ironing. So my reactions reveal my identifications. This is just one item, a dress, but whatever it may be, whatever I am identified with very strongly creates suffering for myself and for others. Now in this case, to say I'm established in what is, so anger arose at the maid and all means what? Yes, anger may arise in the moment because it has a background. Then you'll apologize to the maid. Look, it was just spur of the moment. I didn't mean it. It just came out. I understand we make mistakes. You're not trained enough for this job. Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
I mean, if you look at it, you may be giving the maid a salary of 15,000, perhaps, give or take. Your dress, maybe 50,000. So you're entrusting such a valuable item to a 15,000 maid. I'm not making any.
Sure, sure. No, I get your point.
You realize that you've given it in the hands of a person is inexperienced.
Yes.
Or go and give it to a laundry, you'll charge you 5,000 rupees to clean the
maybe
dress.
And they may not even clean it, they may just send it back. I believe laundries do that.
So why hammer the maid? It's your fault.
And actually, the maid has given you the opportunity to be unselfed.
Yeah.
In fact, you should thank the maid. She'll think you're crazy, but imagine you go and thank the maid. I really thank you for burning my dress. She's given you that opportunity to be unselfed.
Press the button very hard.
Yeah. You know, it really becomes this fun. It really becomes fun when you start seeing things in a different light.
It's a dance.
It's really the dance of Shiva.
I just want to share.
It's funny though. So what happened, other day I happened to meet a friend and something happened. And I realized it was not coming from the pure space, right? So I took the mobile and I was about to send a sorry message. Like as we said, I didn't meant to intend it, but this is what it are. Then I realized the sage would go and say sorry. So I said, oh my God, now if I'm saying sorry, that I'm meaning to myself that I've become a sage.
Oh God.
It was such a thinking, that's what I'm doing, it's too funny. But then I did it, this is what it happened, like the thinking mind, like, you know, I still did it because, of course, it's not that. So I'm just telling how this thinking mind just kicks in and...
You know. No, but why not? Because you are striving to let the intellectual understanding seep in deeper. So what? If the thinking is a sage would have said sorry, so I should say sorry. So what? Where's the harm?
No, that's what I'm telling you, how the ego really tricks you. So you're trying to prove yourself now, you become a sage, now you want to send a sorry message. So.
My cousins, when we were young, these two girls, the elder one was a bully and would end up having to say sorry to the younger one. The younger one had a beautiful dialogue. She said, sorry doesn't make a dead person alive. So the elder one would say, but you're not dead. You see how it goes back and forth. So even sorry is not acceptable. It's crazy.
And it's never about the other person, no? Like, if you ask for it, it's your own realization. Look, it was sorry for my being self. Like, you know, like, oh, like, it's never to ask. It's just your realizations.
It is like I speak about my client. Used to get angry with everyone in my advertising days. And my entire servicing staff said we refuse to deal with him because he's an angry man, you know. And then I had to start dealing with him. Then one day he called me and he said something terrible has happened. I was angry with my uncle, my mama, the night before. And I screamed at him on the phone. And in the morning, I got up, I called to apologize, and he had died of a heart attack in the night. So I didn't get the opportunity to say sorry to him. And I have spent sleepless hours in regret. Then he told me, I'm telling you now only sorry in case I get angry with you.
When you have died, something will be the whole book, the value of study of Vedic.
Oh, lovely.
It just, whenever you are dying,
sure.
It's so similar to what we all do.
Parallels.
Wonderful. That would be great, actually.
Excuse me, please. I just want to share an experience that after coming here, I missed out quite a few, but I have been.
You mean quite regular, yeah.
Quite regular.
Unlike that one.
She stays in the US, you have to come.
After coming here, whenever I come here, I feel the peace. And I feel also I become more confident, less vulnerable, and I feel good about it.
That's great.
I really feel good about it.
You said your name is Smita?
Seema.
And Girish is your son. What more does one want?
I have to thank you or the universe or whatever.
Yeah. As my mother's guru would say, thanking me is like your left hand thanking your right hand.
Mm-hmm. Who was your mother's guru?
He was a judge of the High Court, Justice Dudat.
Okay.
So he used to say this all the time. Thanking me is like your left hand thanking your right hand. Do keep coming.
Sorry?
Do keep coming. It's nice to have you here also.
Same thing with me also.
Yeah.
I feel so blessed and peaceful. And it lingers for a few days also.
Only a few days. That's a very shallow piece then.
After 7-8 days again, I keep coming here.